Neuromancer by William Gibson, continued. Cassette 1, Side 2. Case took the pink handset from its cradle and punched a Hong Kong number from memory. He let it ring 5 times, then hung up. His buyer for the 3 megabytes of hot RAM in the Hitachi wasn't taking calls. He punched a Tokyo number in Shinjuku. A woman answered, something in Japanese. Snake Man there?
Very good to hear from you, said Snake Man, coming in on an extension. I've been expecting your call.
I got the music you wanted, glancing at the cooler.
I'm very glad to hear that. We have a cash flow problem. Can you front?
Oh, man, I really need the money bad. Snake Man hung up. You shit, Case said to the humming receiver. He stared at the cheap little pistol. Iffy, he said. It's all looking very iffy tonight. Case walked into the chat an hour before dawn, both hands in the pockets of his jacket. One held the rented pistol, the other the aluminum flask. Rads was at a rear table, drinking Apollinaris water from a beer pitcher, his 120 kilos of doughy flesh tilted against the wall on a creaking chair. A Brazilian kid called Kurt was on the bar, tending a thin crowd of mostly silent drunks. Rats's plastic arm buzzed as he raised the pitcher and drank. His shaven head was filmed with sweat.
"You look bad, friend artiste," he said, flashing the wet ruin of his teeth.
"I'm doing just fine," said Case, and grinned like a skull. "Super fine." He sagged into the chair opposite Rats, hands still in his pockets.
"And you wander back and forth in this portable bomb shelter built of booze and ups? Sure. Proof against the grosser emotions, yes?"
"Why don't you get off my case, Rats? You seen Wage?"
"Proof against fear and being alone," the bartender continued. "Listen to the fear. Maybe it's your friend."
"You hear anything about a fight in the arcade tonight, Rats? Somebody hurt?"
"Crazy cut a security man," he shrugged. "A girl, they say."
"I gotta talk to Wage, Rats.
Ah."
Rats's mouth narrowed, compressed into a single line. He was looking past Case toward the entrance.
"I think you're about to."
Case had a sudden flash of the shuriken in their window. The speed sang in his head. The pistol in his hand was slippery with sweat.
"Herr Wage," Rats said, slowly extending his pink manipulator as if he expected it to be shaken. "How great a pleasure. Too seldom do you honor us."
Case turned his head and looked up into Wage's face. It was a tanned and forgettable mask. The eyes were vat-grown sea-green Nikon transplants. Wage wore a suit of gunmetal silk and a simple bracelet of platinum on either wrist. He was flanked by his Joe boys, nearly identical young men, their arms and shoulders bulging with grafted muscle.
"How you doing, Case?" "Gentlemen," said Rats, picking up the table's heaped ashtray in his pink plastic claw, "I want no trouble here."
The ashtray was made of thick, shatterproof plastic and advertised Tsingtao beer. Rats crushed it smoothly, butts and shards of green plastic cascading onto the tabletop.
"You understand?"
"Hey, sweetheart," said one of the Joe boys. "You want to try that thing on me?"
"Don't bother aiming for the legs, Kurt," Rats said, his tone conversational.
Case glanced across the room and saw the Brazilian standing on the bar, aiming a Smith & Wesson riot gun at the trio. The thing's barrel, made of paper-thin alloy wrapped with a kilometer of glass filament, was wide enough to swallow a fist. The skeletal magazine revealed 5 fat orange cartridges, subsonic sandbag jellies.
"Technically non-lethal," said Rats.
"Hey, Rats," Case said. "I owe you one." The bartender shrugged.
"Nothing you owe me. These," and he glowered at Wage and the Joe boys, "should know better. You don't take anybody off in the Chatsubo."
Wage coughed.
"So who's talking about taking anybody off? We just want to talk business. Case and me, we work together."
Case pulled the .22 out of his pocket and leveled it at Wage's crotch.
"I hear you want to do me."
Rats's pink claw closed around the pistol and Case let his hand go limp.
"Look, Case, you tell me what the fuck is going on with you. You wig or something?
What's this shit? I'm trying to kill you. Wade turned to the boy on his left. You two go back to the Nambam. Wait for me. Case watched as they crossed the bar, which was now entirely deserted, except for Kurt and a drunken sailor in khakis, who was curled at the foot of a bar stool. The barrel of the Smith & Wesson tracked the two to the door, then swung back to cover Wade. The magazine of Case's pistol clattered on the table. Rats held the gun in his claw and pumped the round out of the chamber.
Who told you I was going to hit you, Case? Wade asked.
Linda.
Who told you, man? Somebody trying to set you up?
The sailor moaned and vomited explosively.
Get him out of here,
Rats called to Kurt, who was sitting on the edge of the bar now, the Smith & Wesson across his lap, lighting a cigarette. Case felt the weight of the night come down on him like a bag of wet sand settling behind his eyes. He took the flask out of his pocket and handed it to Wade.
All I got. Pituitaries. Get you 500 if you move it fast. Had the rest of my roll and some ram, but that's gone by now. You okay, Case?
The flask had already vanished behind a gunmetal lapel.
I mean, fine, this'll square us, but you look bad, like hammered shit. You better go somewhere and sleep.
Yeah. He stood up and felt the chat sway around him. Well, I had this 50, but I gave it to somebody. He giggled. He picked up the .22's magazine and the one loose cartridge and dropped them into one pocket, then put the pistol in the other. I gotta see Sheen, get my deposit back.
Go home, said Rats, shifting on the creaking chair with something like embarrassment. Artiste, go home.
He felt them watching as he crossed the room and shouldered his way past the plastic doors.
Bitch, he said to the rose tint over Shiga.
Down on Ninsei, the holograms were vanishing like ghosts, and most of the neon was already cold and dead. He sipped thick black coffee from a street vendor's foam thimble and watched the sun come up.
You fly away, honey. Towns like this are for people who like the way down.
But that wasn't it, really, and he was finding it increasingly hard to maintain the sense of betrayal. She just wanted a ticket home, and the ram in his Hitachi would buy it for her, if she could find the right fence. And that business with the 50, she'd almost turned it down, knowing she was about to rip him for the rest of what he had. When he climbed out of the elevator, the same boy was on the desk. Different textbook.
Good buddy, Case called across the plastic turf. You don't need to tell me, I know already. Pretty lady came to visit, said she had my key. Nice little tip for you, say 50 new ones.
The boy put down his book.
Woman, Case said, and drew a line across his forehead with his thumb.
Silk. He smiled broadly. The boy smiled back, nodded.
Thanks, asshole, Case said.
On the catwalk, he had trouble with the lock. She'd messed it up somehow when she'd fiddled it, he thought. Beginner. He knew where to rent a black box that would open anything in cheap hotel. Fluorescence came on as he crawled in.
Close the hatch real slow, friend. You still got that Saturday night special you rented from the waiter?
She sat with her back to the wall at the far end of the coffin. She had her knees up, resting her wrists on them. The pepperbox muzzle of a flechette pistol emerged from her hands.
That you in the arcade?
He pulled the hatch down. Where's Linda?
Hit that latch switch.
He did.
That your girl, Linda?
He nodded.
She's gone. Took your Hitachi. Real nervous, kid.
What about the gun, man? She wore mirrored glasses. Her clothes were black, the heels of black boots deep in the temper foam.
Back to Sheen, got my deposit.
Sold his bullets back to him for half what I paid.
You want the money?
No.
Want some dry ice?
All I got right now.
What got into you tonight? Why'd you pull that scene at the arcade? I had to mess up this rent-a-cop came after me with nunchucks.
Linda said you were going to kill me.
Linda said? I never saw her before I came up here.
You weren't with Wade? She shook her head. He realized that the glasses were surgically inset, sealing her sockets. The silver lenses seemed to grow from smooth, pale skin above her cheekbones, framed by dark hair cut in a rough shag. The fingers curled around the Fletcher were slender, white, tipped with polished burgundy. The nails looked artificial. I think you've screwed up, Case. I showed up and you just fit me right into your reality picture. So, what do you want, lady? He sagged back against the hatch. You, one live body, brains still somewhat intact. Molly, Case. My name's Molly. I'm collecting you for the man I work for. Just wants to talk is all. Nobody wants to hurt you. Well, that's good. Except I do hurt people sometimes, Case. I guess it's just the way I'm wired. She wore tight black glove leather jeans and a bulky black jacket cut from the same matte fabric that seemed to absorb light. If I put this dart gun away, will you be easy, Case? You look like you like to take stupid chances. Hey, I'm very easy. I'm a pushover, no problem. That's fine, man. The Fletcher vanished into the black jacket. Because you try to fuck around with me, you'll be taking one of the stupidest chances of your whole life. She held out her hands, palms up, the white fingers slightly spread, and with a barely audible click, 10 double-edged 4-centimeter scalpel blades slid from their housings beneath the burgundy nails. She smiled. The blades slowly withdrew. Chapter 2. After a year of coffins, the room on the 25th floor of the Chiba Hilton seemed enormous. It was 10 meters by 8, half of a suite. A white brawn coffee maker steamed on a low table by the sliding glass panels that opened onto a narrow balcony. Get some coffee in you. Look like you need it. She took off her black jacket. The Fletcher hung beneath her arm in a black nylon shoulder rig. She wore a sleeveless gray pullover with plain steel zips across each shoulder. Bulletproof, Case decided, slopping coffee into a bright red mug. His arms and legs felt like they were made out of wood. Case, he looked up, seeing the man for the first time. My name is Armitage. The dark robe was open to the waist, the broad chest hairless and muscular, the stomach flat and hard. Blue eyes so pale they made Case think of bleach. Sun's up, Case. This is your lucky day, boy. Case whipped his arm sideways, and the man easily ducked the scalding coffee, brown stain running down the imitation rice paper wall. He saw the angular gold ring through the left lobe. Special forces. The man smiled. Get your coffee, Case, Molly said. You're okay, but you're not going anywhere till Armitage has his say. She sat cross-legged on a silk futon and began to field-strip the Fletcher without bothering to look at it, twin mirrors tracking as he crossed to the table and refilled his cup. Too young to remember the war, aren't you, Case? Armitage ran a large hand back through his cropped brown hair. A heavy gold bracelet flashed on his wrist. Leningrad, Kiev, Siberia. We invented you in Siberia, Case. What's that supposed to mean? Screaming Fist, Case. You've heard the name. Some kind of run, wasn't it? Tried to burn this Russian nexus with virus programs. Yeah, I heard about it. And nobody got out. He sensed abrupt tension. Armitage walked to the window and looked out over Tokyo Bay. That isn't true. One unit made it back to Helsinki, Case. Case shrugged, sipped coffee. You're a console cowboy. The prototypes of the programs you use to crack industrial banks were developed for Screaming Fist. For the assault on the Kerensk computer nexus. Basic module was a Nightwing microlite, a pilot, a matrix deck, a jockey. We were running a virus called Mole. The Mole series was the first generation of real intrusion programs. Icebreakers, Case said over the rim of the red mug. Ice from ICE, Intrusion Countermeasures Electronics. Problem is, mister, I'm no jockey now, so I think I'll just be going. I was there, Case. I was there when they invented your kind. You got zip to do with me and my kind, buddy. You're rich enough to hire expensive razor girls to haul my ass up here, is all. I'm never going to punch any deck again, not for you or anybody else. He crossed to the window and looked down. That's where I live now. Our profile says you're trying to con the street into killing you when you're not looking. Profile? We've built up a detailed model, bought a go-to for each of your aliases, and ran the skim through some military software. Your suicidal case, the model gives you a month on the outside, and our medical projection says you'll need a new pancreas inside a year. We, he met the faded blue eyes. We who? What would you say if I told you we could correct your neural damage, Case? Armitage suddenly looked to Case as if he were carved from a block of metal, inert, enormously heavy, a statue. He knew now that this was a dream, and that soon he'd wake. Armitage wouldn't speak again. Case's dreams always ended in these freeze frames, and now this one was over. What would you say, Case? Case looked out over the bay and shivered. I'd say you were full of shit. Armitage nodded. Then I'd ask you what your terms were. Not very different than what you're used to, Case. Let the man get some sleep, Armitage, Molly said from her futon. The components of the Fletcher spread on the silk like some expensive puzzle. He's coming apart at the seams. Terms, Case said. And now, right now. He was still shivering. He couldn't stop shivering. The clinic was nameless, expensively appointed, a cluster of sleek pavilions separated by small formal gardens. He remembered the place from the round he'd made his first month in Chiba. Scared, Case? You're real scared. It was Sunday afternoon, and he stood with Molly in a sort of courtyard. White boulders, a stand of green bamboo, black gravel raked into smooth waves. A gardener, a thing like a large metal crab, was tending the bamboo. It'll work, Case. You got no idea the kind of stuff Armitage has. Like he's going to pay these nerve boys for fixing you with the program he's giving them to tell them how to do it. He'll put them 3 years ahead of the competition. You got any idea what that's worth? She hooked thumbs in the belt loops of her leather jeans and rocked backward on the lacquered heels of cherry-red cowboy boots. The narrow toes were sheathed in bright Mexican silver. The lenses were empty quicksilver, regarding him with an insect calm. "You're street samurai," he said. "How long you work for him?"
"Couple of months."
"What about before that?"
"For somebody else.
Working girl, you know." He nodded.
"Funny, Case."
"What's funny?"
"It's like I know you. That profile he's got. I know how you're wired."
"You don't know me, sister."
"You're okay, Case. What you got, it's called bad luck."
"How about him? He okay, Molly?"
The robot crab moved toward them, picking its way over the waves of gravel. Its bronze carapace might have been 1,000 years old. When it was within a meter of her boots, it fired a burst of light, then froze for an instant, analyzing data obtained.
"What I always think about first, Case, is my own sweet ass."
The crab had altered course to avoid her, but she kicked it with a smooth precision, the silver boot tip clanging on the carapace. The thing fell on its back, but the bronze limbs soon righted it. Case sat on one of the boulders, scuffing at the symmetry of the gravel waves with the toes of his shoes. He began to search his pockets for cigarettes.
"In your shirt," she said.
"You want to answer my question?"
He fished a wrinkled Yehewan from the pack, and she lit it for him with a thin slab of German steel that looked as though it belonged on an operating table.
"Well, I'll tell you, the man's definitely on to something. He's got big money now, and he's never had it before, and he gets more all the time."
Case noticed a certain tension around her mouth.
"Or maybe something's on to him."
She shrugged.
"What's that mean?"
"I don't know exactly. I know I don't know who or what we're really working for."
He stared at the twin mirrors. Leaving the Hilton Saturday morning, he'd gone back to Cheap Hotel and slept for 10 hours. Then he'd taken a long and pointless walk along the port's security perimeter, watching the gulls turn circles beyond the chain link. If she'd followed him, she'd done a good job of it. He'd avoided Night City. He'd waited in the coffin for Armitage's call. Now this quiet courtyard, Sunday afternoon, this girl with a gymnast's body and conjurer's hands.
"If you'll come in now, sir, the anesthetist is waiting to meet you."
The technician bowed, turned, and re-entered the clinic without waiting to see if Case would follow.
cold steel odor. Ice caressed his spine. Lost, so small amid that dark. Hands grown cold. Body image fading down corridors of television sky. Voices. Then black fire found the branching tributaries of the nerves. Pain beyond anything to which the name of pain is given. Hold still. Don't move. And Rats was there, and Linda Lee, Wage, and Lonnie Zone. 100 faces from the neon forest. Sailors and hustlers and whores, where the sky is poisoned silver, beyond chain link and the prison of the skull. God damn, don't you move. Where the sky faded from hissing static to the non-color of the matrix, and he glimpsed the shuriken, his stars. Stop it, Case, I gotta find your vein. She was straddling his chest, a blue plastic serrette in one hand. You don't lie still, I'll slit your fucking throat. You're still full of endorphin inhibitors. He woke and found her stretched beside him in the dark. His neck was brittle, made of twigs. There was a steady pulse of pain midway down his spine. Images formed and reformed. A flickering montage of the sprawl's towers and ragged fuller domes. Dim figures moving toward him in the shade beneath a bridge or overpass. Case? It's Wednesday, Case. She moved, rolling over, reaching across him. A breast brushed his upper arm. He heard her tear the foil seal from a bottle of water and drink. Here. She put the bottle in his hand. I can see in the dark, Case. Micro-channel image amps in my glasses. My back hurts. That's where they replaced your fluid. Changed your blood, too. Blood, 'cause you got a new pancreas thrown into the deal. And some new tissue patched into your liver. The nerve stuff, I don't know. A lot of injections. They didn't have to open anything up for the main show. She settled back beside him. It's 2:43, 12 a.m., Case. Got a readout chipped into my optic nerve. He sat up and tried to sip from the bottle. Gagged, coughed, lukewarm water spraying his chest and thighs. I gotta punch deck, he heard himself say. He was groping for his clothes. I gotta know. She laughed. Small, strong hands gripped his upper arms. Sorry, hotshot. 8-day wait. Your nervous system would fall out on the floor if you jacked in now. Doctor's orders. Besides, they figure it worked. Check you in a day or so. He lay down again. Where are we? Home. Cheap hotel. Where's Armitage? Hilton, selling beads to the natives or something. We're out of here soon, man. Amsterdam, Paris, then back to the sprawl. She touched his shoulder. Roll over. I give a good massage. He lay on his stomach, arms stretched forward, tips of his fingers against the walls of the coffin. She settled over the small of his back, kneeling on the temper foam, the leather jeans cool against his skin. Her fingers brushed his neck. How come you're not at the Hilton? She answered him by reaching back between his thighs and gently encircling his scrotum with thumb and forefinger. She rocked there for a minute in the dark, erect above him, her other hand on his neck. The leather of her jeans creaked softly with the movement. Case shifted, feeling himself harden against the temper foam. His head throbbed, but the brittleness in his neck seemed to retreat. He raised himself on one elbow, rolled, sank back against the foam, pulling her down, licking her breasts, small, hard nipples sliding wet across his cheek. He found the zip on the leather jeans and tugged it down. It's okay, she said. I can see. Sound of the jeans peeling down. She struggled beside him until she could kick them away. She threw a leg across him and he touched her face. Unexpected hardness of the implanted lenses. Don't, she said. Fingerprints. Now she straddled him again, took his hand and closed it over her, his thumb along the cleft of her buttocks, his fingers spread across the labia. As she began to lower herself, the images came pulsing back, the faces, fragments of neon arriving and receding. She slid down around him and his back arched convulsively. She rode him that way, impaling herself, slipping down on him again and again until they both had come, his orgasm flaring blue in a timeless space, a vastness like the Matrix, where the faces were shredded and blown away down hurricane corridors, and her inner thighs were strong and wet against his hips.
A ninsei, a thinner weekday version of the crowd, went through the motions of the dance. Waves of sound rolled from the arcades and pachinko parlors. Case glanced into the chat and saw Zone watching over his girls in the warm, beer-smelling twilight. Rats was tending bar. "You seen Wage, Rats?"
"Not tonight."
Rats made a point of raising an eyebrow at Molly. "You see him, tell him I got his money."
"Luck changing my artiste?"
"Too soon to tell." "Well, I gotta see this guy," Case said, watching his reflection in her glasses. "I got biz to cancel out of." "Armitage won't like it. I let you out of my sight." She stood beneath Dean's melting clock, hands on her hips. "The guy won't talk to me if you're there. Dean, I don't give two shits about. He takes care of himself. But I got people who'll just go under if I walk out of Chiba cold. It's my people, you know." Her mouth hardened. She shook her head. "I got people in Singapore, Tokyo connections in Shinjuku and Asakusa. And they'll go down, understand?" he lied, his hand on the shoulder of her black jacket. "Five. 5 minutes. By your clock, okay?" "Not what I'm paid for." "What you're paid for is one thing. Me letting some tight friends die because you're too literal about your instructions is something else." "Bullshit. Tight friends, my ass. You're going in there to check us out with your smuggler." She put a booted foot up on the dust-covered Kandinsky coffee table.
"Ah, Case, sport. It does look as though your companion there is definitely armed, aside from having a fair amount of silicon in her head. What is this about, exactly?"
Dean's ghostly cough seemed to hang in the air between them.
"Hold on, Julie. Anyway, I'll be coming in alone."
"You can be sure of that, old son. Wouldn't have it any other way."
"Okay," she said. "Go, but 5 minutes. Any more and I'll come in and cool your tight friend permanently. And while you're at it, you try to figure something out."
"What's that?"
"Why I'm doing you the favor."
She turned and walked out, past the stacked white modules of preserved ginger.
"Keeping stranger company than usual, Case?" asked Julie.
"Julie, she's gone. You want to let me in, please, Julie?" The bolts worked.
"Slowly, Case," said the voice.
"Turn on the works, Julie. All the stuff in the desk," Case said, taking his place in the swivel chair.
"It's on all the time," Dean said mildly, taking a gun from behind the exposed works of his old mechanical typewriter and aiming it carefully at Case. It was a belly gun, a magnum revolver with the barrel sawn down to a nub. The front of the trigger guard had been cut away and the grips wrapped with what looked like old masking tape. Case thought it looked very strange in Dean's manicured pink hands.
"Just taking care, you understand. Nothing personal. Now, tell me what you want."
"I need a history lesson, Julie, and a go-to on somebody."
"What's moving, old son?"
Dean's shirt was candy-striped cotton, the collar white and rigid like porcelain.
"Me, Julie. I'm leaving. Gone. But do me the favor, okay?"
"Go-to on whom, old son?"
"Gaijin, name of Armitage. Sweet in the Hilton."
Dean put the pistol down. "Sit still, Case."
He tapped something out on a lap terminal.
"It seems as though you know as much as my net does, Case. This gentleman seems to have a temporary arrangement with the Yakuza, and the Sons of the Neon Chrysanthemum have ways of screening their allies from the likes of me. I wouldn't have it any other way. Now, history. You said history."
He picked up the gun again, but didn't point it directly at Case.
"What sort of history?"
"The war. You in the war, Julie?"
"The war? What's there to know? It lasted 3 weeks.
"Screaming Fist."
"Famous. Don't they teach you history these days? Great bloody post-war political football, that was. Watergate and all to hell and back. Your brass, Case, your sprawl-side brass in, where was it, McLean? In the bunkers, all of that. Great scandal. Wasted a fair bit of patriotic young flesh in order to test some new technology. They knew about the Russians' defenses, it came out later. Knew about the amps, magnetic pulse weapons. Sent these fellows in regardless, just to see."
Dean shrugged.
"Turkey shoot for Ivan."
"Any of those guys make it out?"
"Christ," Dean said. "It's been bloody years.
though I do think a few did. One of the teams got a hold of a Sov gunship. Helicopter, you know. Flew it back to Finland. Didn't have entry codes, of course, and shot hell out of the Finnish defense forces in the process. Special forces types. Dean sniffed. Bloody hell. Case nodded. The smell of preserved ginger was overwhelming. I spent the war in Lisbon, you know, Dean said, putting the gun down. Lovely place, Lisbon. In the service, Julie? Hardly, though I did see action. Dean smiled his pink smile. Wonderful what a war can do for one's markets. Thanks, Julie. I owe you one. Hardly, Case. And goodbye. And later he'd tell himself that the evening at Sammy's had felt wrong from the start, that even as he'd followed Molly along that corridor, shuffling through a trampled mulch of ticket stubs and styrofoam cups, he'd sensed it. Linda's death, waiting. They'd gone to the Namban after he'd seen Dean and paid off his debt to Wage with a roll of Armitage's new yen. Wage had liked that. His boys had liked it less. And Molly had grinned at Case's side with a kind of ecstatic, feral intensity, obviously longing for one of them to make a move. Then he'd taken her back to the chat for a drink. "Wasting your time, cowboy," Molly said when Case took an octagon from the pocket of his jacket. "How's that? You want one?" He held the pill out to her. "Your new pancreas, Case, and those plugs in your liver. Armitage had them designed to bypass that shit." She tapped the octagon with one burgundy nail. "You're biochemically incapable of getting off on amphetamine or cocaine." "Shit," he said. He looked at the octagon, then at her. "Eat it. Eat a dozen. Nothing'll happen." He did. Nothing did. 3 beers later, she was asking Rats about the fights. "Sammy's," Rats said. "I'll pass," Case said. "I hear they kill each other down there." An hour later, she was buying tickets from a skinny tie in a white T-shirt and baggy rugby shorts. Sammy's was an inflated dome behind a portside warehouse, taut gray fabric reinforced with a net of thin steel cables. The corridor, with a door at either end, was a crude airlock, preserving the pressure differential that supported the dome. Fluorescent rings were screwed to the plywood ceiling at intervals, but most of them had been broken. The air was damp and close with the smell of sweat and concrete. None of that prepared him for the arena, the crowd, the tense hush, the towering puppets of light beneath the dome. Concrete sloped away in tiers to a kind of central stage, a raised circle ringed with a glittering thicket of projection gear. No light but the holograms that shifted and flickered above the ring, reproducing the movements of the two men below. Strata of cigarette smoke rose from the tiers, drifting until it struck currents set up by the blowers that supported the dome. No sound but the muted purring of the blowers and the amplified breathing of the fighters. Reflected colors flowed across Molly's lenses as the men circled. The holograms were 10-power magnifications. At 10, the knives they held were just under a meter long. "The knife fighter's grip is the fencer's grip," Case remembered. The fingers curled, thumb aligned with blade. The knives seemed to move of their own accord, gliding with a ritual lack of urgency through the arcs and passes of their dance, point passing point, as the men waited for an opening. Molly's upturned face was smooth and still, watching. "I'll go find us some food," Case said. She nodded, lost in contemplation of the dance. He didn't like this place. He turned and walked back into the shadows, too dark, too quiet. The crowd, he saw, was mostly Japanese, not really a Night City crowd. Techs down from the arcologies. He supposed that meant the arena had the approval of some corporate recreational committee. He wondered briefly what it would be like working all your life for one zaibatsu, company housing, company hymn, company funeral. He'd made nearly a full circuit of the dome before he found the food stalls. He bought yakitori on skewers and 2 tall waxy cartons of beer. Glancing up at the holograms, he saw that blood laced one figure's chest. Thick brown sauce trickled down the skewers and over his knuckles. 7 days, and he'd jack in. If he closed his eyes now, he'd see the Matrix.
Shadows twisted as the holograms swung through their dance. Then the fear began to knot between his shoulders. A cold trickle of sweat worked its way down and across his ribs. The operation hadn't worked. He was still here, still meat. No Molly waiting, her eyes locked on the circling knives. No Armitage waiting in the Hilton with tickets and a new passport and money. It was all some dream, some pathetic fantasy. Hot tears blurred his vision. Blood sprayed from a jugular in a red gout of light. And now the crowd was screaming, rising, screaming, as one figure crumpled, the hologram fading, flickering. Raw edge of vomit in his throat. He closed his eyes, took a deep breath, opened them, and saw Linda Lee step past him, her gray eyes blind with fear. She wore the same French fatigues, and gone into shadow. Pure mindless reflex. He threw the beer and chicken down and ran after her. He might have called her name, but he'd never be sure. Afterimage of a single hair-fine line of red light, seared concrete beneath the thin soles of his shoes. Her white sneakers flashing, close to the curving wall now, and again the ghost line of the laser branded across his eye, bobbing in his vision as he ran. Someone tripped him. Concrete tore his palms. He rolled and kicked, failing to connect. A thin boy, spiked blonde hair lit from behind in a rainbow nimbus, was leaning over him. Above the stage, a figure turned, knife held high, to the cheering crowd. The boy smiled and drew something from his sleeve. A razor etched in red as a third beam blinked past them into the dark. Case saw the razor dipping for his throat like a dowser's wand. The face was erased in a humming cloud of microscopic explosions, Molly's flechettes at 20 rounds per second. The boy coughed once, convulsively, and toppled across Case's legs. He was walking toward the stalls into the shadows. He looked down, expecting to see that needle of ruby emerge from his chest. Nothing. He found her. She was thrown down at the foot of a concrete pillar, eyes closed. There was a smell of cooked meat. The crowd was chanting the winner's name. A beer vendor was wiping his taps with a dark rag. One white sneaker had come off somehow and lay beside her head. Follow the wall. Curve of concrete. Hands in pockets. Keep walking. Past unseeing faces, every eye raised to the victor's image above the ring. Once a seamed European face danced in the glare of a match, lips pursed around the short stem of a metal pipe. Tang of hashish. Case walked on, feeling nothing. Case? Her mirrors emerged from deeper shadow. You okay? Something mewled and bubbled in the dark behind her. He shook his head. Fight's over, Case. Time to go home. He tried to walk past her, back into the dark, where something was dying. She stopped him with a hand on his chest. Friends of your tight friend. Killed your girl for you. You haven't done too well for friends in this town, have you? We got a partial profile on that old bastard when we did you, man. He'd fry anybody for a few new ones. That one back there said they got on to her when she was trying to fence your ram. Just cheaper for them to kill her and take it. Save a little money. I got the one who had the laser to tell me all about it. Coincidence we were here, but I had to make sure. Her mouth was hard, lips pressed into a thin line. Case felt as though his brain were jammed. Who? He said. Who sent them? She passed him a blood-flecked bag of preserved ginger. He saw that her hands were sticky with blood. Back in the shadows, someone made wet sounds and died. After the post-operative check at the clinic, Molly took him to the port. Armitage was waiting. He'd chartered a hovercraft. The last Case saw of Chiba were the dark angles of the arcologies. Then a mist closed over the black water and the drifting shoals of waste. Part 2. The Shopping Expedition. Chapter 3. Home. Home was Bama, the sprawl, the Boston-Atlanta metropolitan axis. Program a map to display frequency of data exchange, every 1,000 megabytes a single pixel on a very large screen. Manhattan and Atlanta burn sight. Then they start to pulse, the rate of traffic threatening to overload your simulation. Your map is about to go Nova. Cool it down. Up your scale. Each pixel a million megabytes. At 100 million megabytes per second, you begin to make out certain blocks in midtown Manhattan, outlines of 100-year-old industrial parks ringing the old core of Atlanta. Case woke from a dream of airports, of Molly's dark leathers moving ahead of him through the concourses of Narita, Schiphol, Orly. He watched himself buy a flat plastic flask of Danish vodka at some kiosk an hour before dawn. Somewhere down in the sprawl's ferro-concrete roots, a train drove a column of stale air through a tunnel. The train itself was silent, gliding over its induction cushion, but displaced air made the tunnel sing, bass down into subsonics. Vibration reached the room where he lay and caused dust to rise from the cracks in the desiccated parquet floor. Opening his eyes, he saw Molly, naked and just out of reach, across an expanse of very new pink temper foam. Overhead, sunlight filtered through the soot-stained grid of a skylight. 1 half-meter square of glass had been replaced with chipboard, a fat gray cable emerging there to dangle within a few centimeters of the floor. He lay on his side and watched her breathe, her breasts, the sweep of a flank defined with the functional elegance of a warplane's fuselage. Her body was spare, neat, the muscles like a dancer's. The room was large. He sat up. The room was empty, aside from the wide pink bed slab and 2 nylon bags, new and identical, that lay beside it. Blank walls, no windows, a single white-painted steel fire door. The walls were coated with countless layers of white latex paint. Factory space. He knew this kind of room, this kind of building. The tenants would operate in the interzone where art wasn't quite crime, crime not quite art. He was home. He swung his feet to the floor. It was made of little blocks of wood, some missing, others loose. His head ached. He remembered Amsterdam, another room, in the old city section of the Centrum, buildings centuries old. Molly, back from the canal's edge with orange juice and eggs. Armitage off on some cryptic foray. The two of them walking alone past Dam Square, to a bar she knew on Damrak Thoroughfare. Paris was a blurred dream. Shopping. She'd taken him shopping. He stood, pulling on a wrinkled pair of new black jeans that lay at his feet, and knelt beside the bags. The first one he opened was Molly's, neatly folded clothing and small, expensive-looking gadgets. The second was stuffed with things he didn't remember buying. Books, tapes, a SimStim deck, clothing with French and Italian labels. Beneath a green T-shirt, he discovered a flat, origami-wrapped package, recycled Japanese paper. The paper tore when he picked it up. A bright, 9-pointed star fell to stick upright in a crack in the parquet. "Souvenir," Molly said. "I noticed you were always looking at him." He turned and saw her sitting cross-legged on the bed, sleepily scratching her stomach with burgundy nails. "Someone's coming later to secure the place," Armitage said. He stood in the open doorway with an old-fashioned magnetic key in his hand. Molly was making coffee on a tiny German stove she took from her bag. "I can do it," she said. "I got enough gear already. Infrascan perimeter, screamers." "No," he said, closing the door. "I want it tight." "Suit yourself." She wore a dark mesh T-shirt tucked into baggy black cotton pants. "You ever the heat, Mr. Armitage?" Case asked from where he sat, his back against a wall. Armitage was no taller than Case, but with his broad shoulders and military posture, he seemed to fill the doorway. He wore a somber Italian suit. In his right hand, he held a briefcase of soft black calf. The Special Forces earring was gone. The handsome, inexpressive features offered the routine beauty of the cosmetic boutiques, a conservative amalgam of the past decade's leading media faces. The pale glitter of his eyes heightened the effect of a mask. Case began to regret the question.
Lots of forces types wound up cops, I mean. This book is continued on cassette 2, side 1.